the gift of witchcraft.
I was able to see, hear, and communicate with spirits.
A very personal relationship between a person and spirit.
Carnal lust and fun things like that.
Working with different energies and spirits and communicating.
Creating magic.
Powerful ritual and powerful spells.
She's actually sticking me in the cauldron.
The role of the witch is to make change.
Bless it be, y'all.
Bless it be.
People ask me, like, okay, I'm a witch and I don't know what to do.
20 years ago, three young friends realized they were witches. They scattered to different parts of the world, following magic and spirit. Now, they're back in their hometown to share what they've learned.
Welcome to That Witch Life Podcast, your home for living as a witch in today's world.
Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us on another episode podcast of That Witch Life. Today we're going to be discussing water witchcraft. This is actually a do-over. We had previously recorded this episode.
I don't want to talk about this anymore.
But for some reason, Courtney decided to muck it all up, and
no,
when she recorded it.
No, I don't. I do not accept responsibility. I do not accept responsibility because you two are the ones that let me run the tech in the first place. So the fact that you did. That's your problem, okay? Well, you should have known my tech background. Anybody who was with me in theater tech knows I don't do sound. And yet, for some reason, I always do sound.
We know that.
Because you won't learn sound.
No, I won't.
So there you go.
Now
you're complaining.
Really, this was just me throwing a technical tantrum of being sick and not being able to be there.
I wasn't going to say that. Because I know you had kind of a hard weekend, so I wasn't going to say that. But I'm like, yeah, this was your fault.
It's my fault. I was sick, and so I sent all these, like, fail vibes out. No,
but I think actually what happened is our listeners sent out the fail vibes when they realized that there would be three episodes in a row without you and not two. And
they were like,
no, we cannot let go.
I know, and of course, because of the way we record, like, I'm sure everyone thinks I'm dead, you know?
I know, and that's one thing we were actually telling people at Sunfest.
Thieves,
I said, okay, guys, there's going to be a couple episodes in a row where Hillary won't be there. It's because she's sick. Now, we recorded these several weeks apart, so it's like one was a bad cold, the other one was like a bad stomach thing. And so, no, she was not hospitalized.
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm not dead. This isn't a fake me.
But what we've all learned together is it was not Kanani's fault. So let's just focus. Let's focus on that.
It was not Kanani's fault.
It was definitely
Kanani. Actually, I will mention, had a moment of grace today at the Dairy Queen, believe it or not. I could not believe how benevolent and giving this woman was. So I didn't have lunch today because I didn't feel like going grocery shopping. And so I thought, well, I'm picking up Kanani. I'm sure we're going by Dairy Queen, so I'll just have ice cream for lunch. You know, WWKD.
What would Kanani do?
And so
have a blizzard for lunch. And so, that's what she would do.
I'm ordering, and I order an Oreo blizzard.
Mint Oreo blizzard. I was proud of you, by the way.
I just got diagnosed with celiac, and I don't even like Oreos. So when they handed it to me, I looked and they go, that has Oreos in it. And Kanani says, yes, that's what you ordered. And I said, I can't eat this. And I said, I don't even like Oreos. Why did I order that? I meant to order mint M&M. And so Kanani said, well, just go back and order. And I was about to drive forward. She goes, there's nobody behind you. Just back up and order.
Yeah, we backed up in the drive-thru. And then we didn't go around.
You were crazy.
Actually, she did. And then Kanani said, just order what you want. She handed me $5. I'll take your other one home and have it for dinner. And I was like, thank you.
So blizzard for lunch, blizzard for dinner. That's how I roll.
But yeah, so when the woman came to the window, like, she just was just like, what? I'm like, yes, it's us again. We forgot something.
So that's why there's another one in my freezer.
That's why there's another one in the freezer.
But I was just like,
I put that in the freezer or the refrigerator?
I'm sure you put it in the freezer.
I might have put it in the refrigerator. It'll actually keep it cold enough. The freezer will make it
thinking,
hard as
she's
hell.
Like, maybe
no,
not.
No, that's because Hillary hasn't slept in a while.
Yeah. I have a dog that's recovering from knee surgery, so that's been a fun, not sleepless scenario.
Which is, please keep little Riley on your altars for healing. This poor little girl
poor
has
girl.
A long recovery. Yeah, but she's got the best dog mama in the world.
She's being a good girl. She's just as, like, impermeable to sedatives, so poor thing. I'm like, come on, you gotta be quiet. And she's like, I'm a 2.5-year-old crazy lab. Like,
yeah, it's like lab mix, trying to keep a lab mix calm. Like, ah.
Yeah, she's like, it's like trying to keep a toddler calm. No. Yeah, so it might be in the fridge, but.
And it might be a puddle of milk.
It can
refreeze.
Right.
Well, that's okay. That just means it'll be my afternoon snack.
Yeah, perfect.
That's totally
fine. It's now a milkshake.
It'll be my Lenner. Like in between lunch and dinner.
Yeah, Kawhi Leonard. That's fair. That's fair.
Whatever it takes. But yeah. I'm actually super excited because I got to fangirl and go crazy over Onwin the first
that podcast. That was obnoxious. Do you have the screaming goat today?
No, it's in the other
room. Oh, man.
I wish I had
it. We're
going to need it.
I'm taking it to a whole new level.
Can you just,
today.
Like, imitate the screaming goat?
No. Oh.
Because I have done so many things. I have done so many things since reading this book that I'm so excited to fangirl all over her all over again because I was such a huge fan of this book. And
I know, I'm really excited. I was really bummed to miss it because I was really interested.
So really it was your desires that screwed up
the audio. Okay. Yeah.
That's right.
So anyway, right. Onwin's going to take a deep breath and sigh and talk to us again.
Because she's fabulous.
I actually had some good success with some water magic at the new moon in the beginning of July. So my husband and I are trying to get into more of a habit of getting our floors washed more often. So I didn't realize this, but I was finding myself having the same angry conversations over and over again with a couple of people who have annoyed me. And, you know, we parted ways because sometimes you just have to part ways with people. And I just found myself still having the angry conversation in my head. Like, if I had a chance to say this, I would say this. And thinking nothing of it, but Brian and I made a floor wash based on some of the practices that Damon suggested 2 episodes ago about clearing energy in your house. So we used lemon balm because I have a plethora of it in the backyard and some rosemary, which I also have in the backyard. And boiled that with some salt water and just like as he was saying, you know, squish and get all the green out, get the green into the water. And then we washed the floors. I did put a little bit of Mr. Clean in there because our floors were actually dirty. And so this was a good way to both physically and energetically mop. So I had a whole wash going on. And after I washed the floor, my husband went through with a smoke clearing and also lit a white candle, which was something Damon suggested is go through every room in the house. And after you clean it, burn a white candle. And then something that I learned from Chiron Armand, who we had earlier in the year, which is a hoodoo technique, is you take the floor wash out to the curb and you throw it all into the street. If you're in an apartment building, you can do it in front of your building. If you can't do that in front of your building, you can just kind of fleck it away from the front of your apartment into the hall, anything that's symbolic. I didn't throw the whole bucket into the street because, like I said, I had actual soap in there. I didn't want that in the groundwater, but like little splashes, okay, it's not too bad.
It's the symbolism.
It's the symbolism, and then the rest of it I flushed down the toilet. I have to be honest, I haven't had any of those internal conversations since then.
Wow. That's really good.
And I wasn't like consciously like, I'm letting these things go. I just said, I'm washing stuff out. But as I was washing stuff out, I was starting to relive moments of pain. As in certain places, like when my husband and I got bad medical news, I remembered that moment as I'm washing over that floor. If I had a fight with somebody over Facebook and at the kitchen table, I was having that as I was mopping that off the floor. Or, if, you know, some of the nights when things got really hard with my last book and I'm at my altar at 3:00 a.m. going, you know, what the fuck? How am I supposed to write this book? That all went with it. And it just, I don't know. It was like, I haven't really had those conversations since then. So these washes really work. I mean, water witchcraft is a very, very powerful thing.
For sure.
Yeah. So I wanted to make sure I shared that I've been using the techniques our past guests have, had us do. So
one of the interesting things that's happened since we had talked to her and since I've read this book is, which goes along with water, but it's also a little different, is, I have suddenly filled my house with plants, which is really weird for me. Like, my whole patio now is covered in plants. I have plants in almost every room of the house. And I find myself I don't know how to explain it other than, like, I'm absolutely going to get a fountain, but I'm being very particular.
Are these plants living or are you killing them off?
So far they're trying to die, but I'm also trying to keep them alive. So I don't know who's going to win the battle, but there is a, I'm going to live.
Are
no,
you a
I'm
murderer
dying.
Of plants?
I'm a murderer of all plants equally. I'm an equal opportunity plant killer. So far the only plant I've managed to not kill is the Rose of Jericho because essentially it wants to die. And so I just let it live
die.
Its
it
purpose.
Literally cannot
I know.
Die.
I let it fulfill its life purpose.
It's begging you.
And then I'm like, no, I'm going to give you water
like
again.
It's like that character in that one episode of Black Mirror. It says, let it be done, let it be done. And then the guy that looks like Matt Damon on meth was like, no, and brings it back to life. And
yes, exactly. but something about, you know, water and bringing life and stuff like that, it just suddenly made me just feel like I needed to have more living things in our home. And so that's something that's been really, really cool. And one of the things that I realized in reading the book is, we'll go into it more with her as far as different tools and stuff she talks about, but I really, a lot of what's in here I do. Like, it's already a part of what I do. And we've all discussed at one point.
Like, what kind of stuff?
Well, like, we all discussed when we went to the beach.
Yeah.
You know, for our special, like, episode together where we did a ritual together. Like, we didn't just do that at someone's house. We all, like, let's go to the beach. So we all, you know, instinctively already have this kind of connection with water. And so, I'm super excited to fangirl all over her all over again. But one of the interesting things that's kind of topically happening right now is there is a huge firestorm over the internet over the new Ariel.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. I literally
for the live-action movie.
Cannot handle people. Like, are you serious? Like, so much shit is going on in the
yes.
world right now, and you give a shit about a literal cartoon looking like a human version of a cartoon looking identical to that. They just arbitrarily chose what a character looks like. Like, it's not like historically the real Ariel looked like, not a real thing, friends. Like,
hey, first of all, you just destroyed one of my dreams. So let's
but
know,
I mean, like, literally,
understand
I'm
that.
Like, I mean, honestly, like, even if that was the literal, even if this was a real human, like, does it matter? Like, does it affect the storyline?
I can tell you the reason that they chose the actress that they did is because anyone who has ever heard
her voice,
her open her mouth,
unbelievable.
You just melt to the floor.
She's
and just
literally
like,
perfect.
I've not heard
can
her
I?
Sing, but does she have the siren sound?
She has
holy
that, like,
crap.
That sweet, bright, really clear sound that,
okay.
like, the original
it's
character
stunning.
Had.
Yeah.
Don't people have better things to worry about? I'm just like, give me a break. Like,
well, I saw someone who actually had a great comment, which is something I had totally forgotten, which was that, I don't even know how long ago, back in the day, they redid Cinderella. And
Brandy played
yeah, was
Cinderella.
Like, and Whitney Houston was the fairy godmother.
Yeah.
No one gave two craps about that. But,
yeah.
as I pointed out, that's also back when people were afraid to be racist and they knew to keep their mouth shut.
Well, they probably were, but also they didn't have Twitter around.
Yeah, they
yes,
didn't have
that's
to
true.
Vocalize
that's
it.
True.
I mean,
and they weren't in an environment where, like, they feel super emboldened.
Right,
to, like,
and people liking
hateful,
their super
awful,
racist comments.
Stuff.
They could just say it, they said it to their, you know,
their super
stupid
shitty racist
people
friends. That...
Yeah, so one of the things that kind of it floors me as someone who spends a lot of time researching folklore and spirits and things like that is that if you do just a little bit of research, you will see that many, many different cultures in Africa had mermaids as part of their folklore.
Yeah, yep.
Like,
absolutely.
And there's a book that I really enjoyed called A Field Guide to Demons. It's by Carol M. Mack and Dinah Mack. And they have... like, each chapter is dedicated to a different kind of subversive spirit, and then underneath the title of the creature is what part of the world it comes from. So, say for example, some of the spirits that come out of Mexico, they might say these are indigenous Mexican spirits. But under mermaids, it says global, and it points out that every culture that has a relationship with the sea has some kind of story about usually a woman who's half fish or half and half human, or she
so
has
so many cultures.
Oh, yeah, gills. She has something she, you know, or there was part seal or something
yeah,
like that.
Selkies.
The Selkies, yeah, that, yeah. And so you really can't say. And then also, there's this really beautiful story that I just recently learned about called her name is the Mami Wata. And she is, she's an African mermaid, essentially. And she was credited with bringing down some of the slave ships and dragging them to the depth and then freeing the souls of the people, the enslaved people, and then, you know, murdering the people who had kidnapped them. So this is, like, old, old stuff. But One of my favorite things about folklore is trying to find out what the original story was, or what was the impetus for the story to be created. And one of the things that was published today was by a folklorist, college professor in Denmark. Now, Hans Christian Andersen was Danish, and some people are trying to argue that The Little Mermaid, the story about The Little Mermaid, is a Danish folktale, and therefore The Little Mermaid should be white, because in Denmark it's full of white people. But as this folklorist pointed out, in Hans Christian Andersen's day, not everybody was white. You know, they had just ended slavery in Denmark, and so they did have people of color there who were emancipated. And so he was familiar with people who weren't white.
And also, like, what I don't understand is, like, it doesn't affect the story at all. It doesn't affect
the story, but here's what she said. This is what I really appreciated. So she talked about that The Little Mermaid was actually a story about trying to rise into aristocracy, and the lengths that people would go to in order to get out of poverty and to get out of being a lower, like, under the heel of the upper class, and then how much pain they had to go through, and how they had to give up their voice. Literally, they had to, like, give up their cultures and their identity in order to be part of this upper echelon, eventually would kill them. And so her synopsis said, The Little Mermaid was written by Hans Christian Andersen as a way of negotiating his own underprivileged situation in society. It was written to bring attention to the lack of privilege among lower classes in the aristocracy, and it was written for all those out there who felt that lack of privilege. With this story, he wanted to tell the aristocracy exactly how much you have to go through when you strive for something better. By taking away the mermaid's voice, he brilliantly pointed out to the rulers in society that there are things that the striving pariahs cannot tell them. By letting the mermaid suffer greatly, he brilliantly pointed out to the aristocracy that striving pariahs go through so much pain just to get a whiff of what their life feels like. Considering the spirit in which the story was originally written, I guess it is only befitting that Disney cast a non-white actress to play Ariel.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, but I don't like the word pariah, but in this context, but I understand.
But yeah, what I mean, the thing is, it's like, I mean, it nails home that entire message, which is this: how someone who is marginalized or is oppressed has, how hard they have to work to get anywhere, like to work their way up to get any recognition or any sort of visibility in society. So
I'm sure people are going to come up with different reasons for what the Little Mermaid is about, but here's the bottom line: it's not a big deal.
Yeah,
I'm like,
that's
fish.
That's the end of it's not a big deal. And one of the things that frustrates me more than anything in the world is inclusivity is not pie. Someone being able to recognize themselves in Ariel does not take away from you.
Right, exactly.
You're adding to their experience. It does not take away from your experience. One of the saddest things I ever read, it was supposed to be happy, and it just devastated me, was an actress I totally love. Her name's Chrissy Teigen, and she's adorable, and she's a Twitter mofo, so I'm sure most people know about her. She said that she was watching the movie with her daughter. She took her daughter to watch Crazy Rich Asians. And her mom, her daughter loved it. And she goes, "Look, mommy, they look like me."
Yeah.
Exactly.
That representation
is important.
Devastated me. Not because it's not the sweetest thing in the whole entire world to say, but the fact that it actually had to be said.
That it was like the first
because
time.
Because she has not watched other movies where characters looked like her. That's ridiculous. That's completely unacceptable. And so for people to somehow get all bent out of shape because for once a character that they saw that was white is now not going to be white, and somehow that gets in their craw, you need to find something better to be upset about, because I can promise you there's a million things in this
world. Yeah, I can think about 100 right now
that you should justifiably be upset and concerned about. Little girls of color being able to look at The Little Mermaid and see themselves is not something that in any way, shape, or form should upset you.
Yeah.
And it does not take anything away from you or your childhood or the mermaid that you knew.
Right. And I remember taking, with our friend Isabel, we took my goddaughters to the Renaissance Festival at Fort Tryon Park. We lived in New York City. And every stall had fairies in it. Now, Isabel's Puerto Rican, And her niece is also Puerto Rican, dark hair, dark dark skin. And she wanted to buy her a fairy for herself, like, to hang up. And all the fairies were white and blonde and skinny. And it's like,
really?
Where in what story can't the fairy be curvy? Or the fairy be brown? Or the fairy have, like, at least find a fairy with black hair.
It's
we went through to see if, even if, okay, fine. If, at the very least, find a fairy who has the same color hair as she. And we couldn't find one. And it was so sad.
That's
and there were
so
a lot
bad.
Of people at the Renaissance Festival who were not white or skinny. And it was like, why would they want to buy art that only looks like this very, very one, and I'll just come out and say it, very boring way of depicting these mythological creatures. It'd be much more interesting to see both racial and bodily diversity. And, you know, give us a fairy who only has one arm.
Yeah.
You know, why not? Like, I would much rather see what's her story there, you know?
Give us a fairy that's in a wheelchair. Give us a fairy that's different races, different...
Yeah.
And the thing is most people, you know, who, you know, like us, who've grown up white, until you think about it, it's not something you think about.
Oh,
you don't ever think about it.
It's
totally not on your radar because it's all you know. And you don't realize how sad it is until you realize that for people of color, just seeing white people, for the most part, is all they knew.
Right.
Like, that is not okay. It's not okay. And so, of course, it's something that they had to get used to. Whereas for us, it's like it's not even something you think about. But then once you realize it, and then all of a sudden you're like, this is not acceptable. And so that's where my frustration is when then things like this happen and people get all bunched up about it. Because I'm just like, seriously? Like, at what point, you know, is it okay for someone to not, you know, be white? And I understand there was a previous character, but I understand why they're doing it. And quite frankly, the reason they're doing it is because when this girl opens her mouth, it is incredible.
She sounds like she's for the perfect fit. She's young and she's got the right voice.
You melt to the floor and you're just like, please just let me listen to her sing. She's got a voice that's just mesmerizing.
Well, I think what you said was really important, Kanani, is that inclusion is not a pie.
No.
So just because somebody is getting better representation, I think there's this thing there about the sense of ownership. It's like, it's fine that, you know, we've got a Polynesian Disney princess in Moana, and it's fine that there's an African American Disney princess from what was her, Tiana?
Princess and the Frog.
Yeah, Princess and the Frog from Tiana. And then, but no, Little Mermaid is ours, quote unquote. Well, no, she's not. She is
she's a
don't
fictional
imply
character.
Ownership.
It's not a real person. You're not recreating a factual biography of somebody.
Uh-huh.
Like, I understand if you're recreating a human that existed in history that did a thing, you would want to represent them as they were because that's who they are.
Yeah.
But this is a fictional character.
Right, as people say, hey, look, it wouldn't make sense to cast an African-American as Meriadoc because she's from Scotland. And at the same time, I'm going, well, wait a minute, though. You know, Scottish kings did bring in queens from abroad. So there's no reason why this king didn't bring in a queen from Turkey.
Right.
You know, and so he does have a wife with darker skin and darker hair. And so we've got a Scottish princess with dark skin and dark hair. That historically is more accurate than saying they only married white people up there. But I could see why they were saying, okay, but because it's a Scottish
fairy tale.
It's a fairy tale and it's not connected to any country, any specific
no actual person.
We don't know where Prince Eric lives. He's just a prince.
Yeah.
He could be from anywhere.
He could be freaking anywhere.
Okay, so who do we want to see play Prince Eric? I think it should just be Princess Erica and it should be a lesbian mermaid.
That would be amazing.
Let's have lesbian mermaids.
I'm super into that.
We should have Queen Latifah as Princess Erica.
Oh my God.
I can't remember, but I think they have chosen the Eric and I can't remember who it was.
Oh my God.
I can't remember who it was.
A lesbian couple would be amazing.
I know, the lesbian mermaid.
I have heard that they've thought about doing that in Frozen, which I think would be awesome.
God, that would be awesome.
They had talked about making Elsa a lesbian, which I think would be amazing.
Well, it's actually funny because back in my old coven, we would always pull seasonal rulers out of the hat. So in many covens, you have an Oak King and a Holly Queen. No, an Oak King and a Holly King. In my coven, sometimes we had an Oak Queen and a Winter Queen. You know, so we had two queens. We would just call it Lesbian Winter.
Yeah,
nice.
It was lesbians rule the universe for, you know, for 6 months. And people loved Lesbian Winter. And so Frozen to me sounds like Lesbian Winter.
Lesbian Winter.
I'm down.
Inclusivity adds. It does not take away. So to add people to the mix and to make people feel welcome, it does not take away from you.
No.
And I hope that maybe even people who knee-jerk reaction had that kind of a reaction, please think about it and realize that it doesn't take away from you or your childhood experience or what you saw or how you picture Ariel. It's totally fine.
Yeah.
This is just new for different people. And this, they get to have. They get to have their own Ariel now. So the girls with the pale skin and the red hair, they can still enjoy the cartoon Ariel.
There's plenty,
and they can enjoy the new Ariel.
There are plenty of representation exactly. of white people in films.
Yeah.
Like 99%. So it's like...
Yeah, like you're good. Like, let appreciate the fact that there's now this entire demographic of little girls and women who can watch this
and
see themselves
it's
in a
so
way
important.
That they didn't get yeah. to.
I think it's also a call out there. Artists
you can share that experience.
Yeah, call out to artists. When you're drawing your mythological creatures, make some of them with dark skin. Make some of them
yeah.
with curves.
Oh,
don't make them all skinny and white.
Absolutely.
Let's see some more fat fairies. Let's see some more fat mermaids. Let's see some more, you know, let's see some more Asian fairies.
Absolutely. I mean, anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I've always thought that's really weird, too. You go and you're like, oh, I want this fairy. And if it's not in, like, metal and, like, pewter... You go and like it's a white blonde thin blue
yeah.
eyed
and it's
fairy and it's boring.
Boring.
It's all of them are like that. I'm like,
it's
no
boring.
Way, every fairy looks like that.
No.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that my mermaid decals that I got at the dollar store have multicultural mermaids.
I love
so
that.
I
have multicultural
you know.
Mermaids in my house as well.
It's and like... they only cost a dollar, so come on, they can be found. Okay, let's work a little harder. Let's make our lives
multicultural.
Let's make our lives a little bit more.
Store.
Yes, multicultural mermaids at the dollar store.
I think
come
we found
on.
The tagline
oh
for this episode.
That's right. Now we have our new corporate sponsor, dollar store. So talking about mermaids is pretty much the perfect way to segue into our guest today, who is Anwen Avalon. She is the author of the book Water Witchcraft, Magic and Lore from the Celtic Tradition. She is an initiated priestess and witch whose path focuses on water and serving the spirits and goddesses that dwell within. Her focus is on sacred wells, rivers, and lakes, but she enjoys time at the seashore as well. She expresses her path through witchcraft, watercolor painting, and sacred movement, which focuses on devotional and theatrical water-themed belly dance pieces. She is the founder and teacher of Triskel Rose Witch and the 9-month Water Magic Course, and is also the author of the book that I just mentioned. Thank you so much for joining us again, Anwen.
Well, thank you for having me.
I'm super excited. I get a fangirl over you all over again.
One thing we realized when we did this, the practice interview is what I'm going to call it now, the practice interview, is that Anwen and I have something really important in common, in that... We are both authors through Wiser Books. A lot of our work is through the Celtic world. We both have best friends who have read each other's books. Her best friend has read my book. Kanani has read Anwen's, but our best friends won't actually read our books. So Kanani has not read a single one of my books.
True.
And Anwen's best friend has not read a single one of Anwen's books.
Oh my God.
So we realized it was this very strange switcheroo.
That's kind of hilarious.
I know, it was pretty insane. I was like, yeah. So
Anwen, let's get started with what is it that brought you to water witchcraft?
All right. A lifelong pull is the very short version. The long version takes me on many twists and turns through the world and down the river of life, I suppose. I grew up in Florida, and so I was constantly surrounded by water, all the springs that are out there, there's tons of rivers and creeks, and the ocean was just 5 to 10 minutes away, and so I grew up in this, like, water-saturated environment, and I spent a lot of time playing in the ocean, and weekends at the springs with family, and we actually lived... with our house on the very edge of a swamp or like a wetland wildlife preserve. So I was really lucky in the fact that I got to go out and play in the swamps as a kid. I had these like black Wellingtons that I used to put on and like head out into the swamps and like play with like snakes and spiders, and I got grounded for catching snakes in jars, and, aww, you know, stuff like that. You know, in Florida, my parents were kind of right to ground me, because in Florida, there's some really dangerous,
not safe things.
And they're like...
Did you catch any poisonous ones?
I did. That's how I got there.
Oh, my God. What did you catch?
I caught a coral snake in a mason jar.
Oh, my God.
And a pygmy rattlesnake, also in a mason jar.
And your parents are like, no.
Like, how
not
many times?
On our watch.
Don't do that. Stop playing with things.
Oh, my God.
I did get a reputation in the neighborhood for being the snake girl, because I've always been one of those people that, like, on certain topics, if I'm interested in it, I know everything about it. Like, I will just, like, go down the list and be like, here's all the things I'm going to learn, and then I will learn it. So the neighbors used to call my mom and be like, oh, hey, can you send your daughter over, because we have a snake in the yard and we don't know if it's safe to go out. And so I'd ride my bike over and go in and look out the back window and be like, oh, no, you can't go outside, that's a water moccasin. Or, oh, no, that's fine, that's king snake, he'll keep
that's
the rest
of the favorite, that they were afraid to go outside, so they invited a small child to come check it out for them. That is my jam right there. Like, I'm going to be in my house. I'm sipping on my wine. I need you to send your kid over to let me know if it's too dangerous.
Right. There might have been some bets or drinking game, like 3 shots if it's poisonous.
Oh,
and,
my God.
You know.
That's a life that we do not have up here. Like, Oregon has not as many poisonous things.
Yeah, not in our area. You've got, they're more on the desert areas. Yeah, we don't have so much up here. Yeah.
When I first moved here, the first thing that I did was Google, like, all right, tell me the poisonous snakes in Oregon. And I found out that it's only on the desert side. And I think that there's one, like, rattlesnake. But over here in our area, nothing. So I play with those babies all the time.
Little garter snakes. My dog ate a garter snake and hung it on a tree branch when he was done with it.
Are you serious?
He did. He ate its little head off and then just hung it up there saying, look what I did.
Oh, my God.
We threw it away. He was so mad. He was so
mad.
He's
like, what?
He's like, that was my snake. I was going to save that.
He's like, wow, rude.
Merry Christmas, Mom. I decorated the tree.
So, yeah, my son announced at the 4th of July party this past weekend that my mom collects snake skins. And so I guess it's still true that I'm really connected to that serpent energy. It was just like a random thing. He was just like, that's what my mom does. She just collects snake skins.
That's it. That's all.
That's so awesome.
So anyways, finishing the question. So growing up in Florida, lots of water, and then moved with my family to Phoenix, and then I ended up graduating high school and moving to Northern Arizona University. And even though there's not a lot of water up or in Arizona, there happens to be water in the northern areas. There's lakes, there's sacred springs, there's creeks, and there's a lot of, like, really sacred kind of watery environment. And then I moved again and again and again, and it took me from Arizona to North Carolina, so I was living near the beach, and then over to Okinawa, Japan. And I lived in Okinawa, Japan for about 3 years. I danced, I taught belly dance, and I joined a circle out there, an American pagan circle, and we had an adopt-a-beach, and we adopted this beach, and we would go out and clean it, and the locals had a shrine to a sea goddess, and I wish that I knew more about it, but I remember, like, walking up to it and being like, hey, what's this? And they're like, oh, that's, like, just a local shrine to the sea goddess. And so I started just kind of, like, going there on my own and putting offerings and doing work in the areas that we had cleaned, and just really had a deep connection with the water and the water spirits there. And later on, I find out, of course, that it's an island where there's still working priestesses.
Oh, wow.
When I moved from there, I ended up back in North Carolina and then back in Phoenix. And Phoenix was interesting because I spent about 4 years there. And that is when Like, water had always been with me, and I had always been connected to water and this water magic practice. But it was really in Phoenix where I was like, oh, this is a thing. Like, this is a big thing, because it was when there was the lack of water that it really just kind of smacked me in the face, like, you know, it's not everywhere. Like, you've been blessed to be in places where you're living right next to the water, or there's sacred springs, or the water is clean, and there's a lot of places that don't have it.
That's and one, so, one of the things that I thought was amazing about your book was that you talk about water in so many different forms that I think most people, when they think water magic, they think immediately the ocean.
Yes.
And then maybe they think like lakes and rivers. But you talk about it as like sacred springs, wells, creeks, just the rain. And you even talk about where you talked about like swamps. Like, I don't necessarily think of a swamp, you know, when I think, right? Yeah. And then you talk about, you know, water in its different forms, and you talk about, you know, water is fog and water is rain. And then I was just totally blown away when you talked about it as mist. And I was just like, yes, you know, steam and mist. And so I think that if there's people who they don't live near water, this book is going to like really open their minds to the water that does exist around them, even though they feel like I live somewhere where there's no water.
Yeah.
I live somewhere where there's no water.
Right. Yeah. That's, sea witches and sea priestesses, I think, are like, that phrase is really popular. But it really, for me, took a new turn when I was living in a place that I wasn't near the ocean. And so I was like, where is the water? And living in Phoenix, where you think that there isn't any, I actually found a lot. There's sacred springs. I mean, they're a little bit on the outside, but like, so Arizona itself, there is multiple sacred springs. There's hot springs, there's waterfalls, and just really beautiful places. But even things like canals and man-made lakes, they all hold an energy. I mean, like a man-made lake doesn't hold the same energy as like a glacial lake that's been around for thousands of years, but it still does have its own energy. And anywhere that there's water or green land, there's local spirits and land spirits connected.
Well, and you even talked about fountains.
Yeah, fountains.
And the use of fountains.
In the old texts, you know, when they talk about, like, the fount, like, the lady of the fount or stuff like that, it's often connected with a sacred spring, because the springs and wells and founts are often the same thing, just different words. But within a modern context, we have all of these beautiful art installations where they're not necessarily connected to a sacred spring, and they're not bringing out water for us to drink or for nourishment, but they're bringing out water for art, for light, for life, for beauty. And so even these very modern water fountains that you might just see at your grocery store, at the local mall, they also have this energy about them that is great for magic, especially if people start throwing coins in them, because that's a really old practice of giving votive offerings. We think like wishing wells, throw the coin in, but why do we throw the coin in there? We throw it in there as this, like, we've been repeating what we've done for thousands of years, where we take this thing and we give it as a votive offering, or that reciprocity. And so any man-made founts that already kind of have that going on, there's a possibility that a water spirit may have moved in. So don't discount brand new fountains and beautiful art installations, because there's a lot of interesting energy that surrounds them or dwells within them as well.
I just got this image of water spirits like hermit crabs and moving into a vacant shell. Yeah. Like moving into a vacant fountain, all of a sudden the hermit crab spirit comes in. It's like, hello. We always imagine that water spirits are these beautiful, dainty creatures, but what if they are all just giant hermit crabs?
Oh my God, I'm into that. There must be some that aren't these, like, dainty, beautiful, flowy, whatever.
There must be some that are crazy hermit crab spirits.
Yeah, I believe that.
Yeah.
One of the things, too, is that you talk about, which I think can also help to really help people to, if they're not around bodies of water, to feel engaged, which makes perfect sense. It's the combination of water and the moon, and the moon and the tides. And that can still kind of pull that kind of water energy when you're doing moon work. You know, yeah. You're doing a lot of working, you know, the moon involves the tides. And so those two magical practices, I think, mesh beautifully together as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. If it affects a body of water, and we are bodies of water, then of course it affects us as well. And we've seen this, like, just with things like there being more babies born around the full moon. It's because of that gravitational pull and that interaction with the lunar and the water that it brings around some very potent magic, you know. And you can work with the tides. You know, if you could be 2 hours away from the beach and still work with the tides, and modern technology is the best, because you can get a tide tracker. There's a couple apps where you can do, I think it's Tides Near Me or Tide Tracker. There might be two different ones. And you can actually watch the tides in your favorite beach, and you can correspond some of your magic, especially if you're doing sea magic 2 hours away from the sea, with the tides that are happening at the location itself.
So how might you incorporate the energy of the tides with a spell you were doing? Maybe give us an example.
Oh, let's see. So many different things, but I guess simply a tide that is going out or low tide would have a similar energy as your waning moon or your darker moons. And so bonus, if you're doing like banishing work, you can align it with the waning moon and the tide going out to low. And so if you just happen to be able to, you know, plan it perfectly, then that can then add a little extra. But you can also do things like collecting water in jars from the low tide or the tide going out, and you can bring those back for your own work as well. And you could say, okay, this water here was collected on a, you know, whatever moon cycle, and when the tide was going out. And so then you can correspond that, and same thing with like the tide coming in. You want to manifest stuff, you want to bring stuff in, then you can collect water from the water coming in and the high tides, and you can work with that. And I just recommend keeping them in, like, I like using blue cobalt or other colored jars, and then I label them. And having that label on there too can kind of help to keep it specifically charged with what it already the energy that it already held. And this goes back to Dr. Emoto's work, where writing things like love on a glass of water and hate on a glass of water, and then studying the different crystal components of it, or the crystalline structure of each crystal, and they look very different. And so labeling them helps to kind of keep them from just meshing, I guess, into your water cupboard. Because someone had asked me that once, how do you keep water in a clear glass jar from Glastonbury separate from, you know, your water from just your regular full moon? Wouldn't they, after sitting in the cupboard for a while, start to kind of have that resonance of each other and that kind of thing? And I was like, oh yeah, but I try and keep them in darker colored glass and in the dark cupboard, and then keeping that label on there.
And you also talk about the power of, like, catching rain during, like, a thunderstorm.
Yes, because rain during a thunderstorm has such a different purpose than a beautiful sun shower. Rain that you catch from a sun shower is definitely going to be used in healing work and sun work and anything to do with the light. Whereas thunderstorm is, you know, you can capture that kind of more aggressive essence and then use that as the base for things like war water or protection or something like that.
That makes total sense. That's really interesting.
Yeah. I love this because we spend so much time charging our crystals and our waters and things by astrology.
Yeah.
But why not use water, which is going to be charged with energy that's so close to us?
Yeah, for
right.
Sure.
Yeah, it's the energy of nature. It's pure nature. It's I'm so in love with the book. I've broken it open so many times. And
she's got
and
all these little.
It.
She's like got all these she's little. My like little notes.
My little post-it.
Yeah, and I'm sure that someday the book that I wrote will look just like it, but
it's not
today.
Happen.
Don't hold your breath.
Yeah, don't.
Now I think it's by Spike.
See, Hillary's learned. Hillary's like, no.
Hillary's like, no, I will read your book, and she will. Kanani's like, now I'm just not going to do it because it's funny that I haven't yet.
It's true. It's so true. But it's fun because you even, in here, you go through, like, spirits of the merfolk. Like, do you want to tell us any fun little stories that you talk about in the book?
Yeah, there's so many. Oh my gosh, I really went, I mean, I've been collecting a lot of these stories for years and years and years, but I really went deep into some of these because I wanted people to know about strange spirits like Shellycoat, because nobody's heard of Shellycoat. And Shellycoat, you know, you said hermit crabs earlier, it kind of reminded me of that, but he's a water spirit that lives near the shores, and he can be a little mischievous, but he's not considered necessarily evil. And he wears a coat covered in shells. And to me, that's just like the hermit crab, you know? And so I was thinking, like, as you were saying that, I was envisioning Shellycoat with these, you know, these crab claw hands. Oh, there's so many good ones. Melusine is a wonderful, wonderful story that really is dynamic and teaches you a lot. And she's an interesting spirit because she's water, but she embodies fire, earth, and air as well. And so she's a really great spirit to work with when you are water, but you perhaps want to work with other elements such as fire. Or if you want to learn about dragons. She has some interesting dragon lore as well. And the Gwagathanun, which translates the wives of the underworld, they are a Welsh group of, or Welsh classification of lake fairy. And your stories from Arthurian legend of the Lady of the Lake and such, they come from this. In my opinion, they come from this particular class of lake fairy. And so the original Lady of the Lake story comes from the Mabinogi, and it has nothing to do with Arthurian tales. It's a story of love and teaching and knowledge and sovereignty and not putting up with abuse from your man. But the short version of this one is there was a young girl, actually there was a young boy, and he was out tending his cattle, and he came across a lake. And in the middle of the lake, this young girl comes up and comes over to him and says, "Hey, let me have some of your bread." And so he gives it to her, and she's like, "You know, this is too hard. Will you bring me more bread tomorrow that's softer?" And he says, "Sure." So the next day, he does. He brings her bread that's softer, except this time it's too soft. It's like a little bit uncooked. And she's like, "Well, will you bring me another loaf tomorrow that's not too soft and not too hard?" And he says, "Yes." So he does. And she's like, "All right, now that you've given me like the perfect bread, I will marry you. But here's the rules. Like, you can't strike me three times, and you have to come back tomorrow." And so he does, and instead of the young maiden rising out of the lake, there's a man, and the man is kind of covered in duckweed and seaweed and kind of has, like, this Poseidon-type energy going on, and with him are two girls that are identical, and he's like, "So, you know, you gave my daughter the bread, and she told me all about you, but, she said that you're going to marry her, but you can, if you can pick which one. You can remember which girl it is." And the girls are identical in dress and look and everything. And so he stares and he contemplates for a while and comes to the conclusion that he just doesn't know. And then she kind of tips her little toe, just kind of scooches it out a little bit. And he sees it and picks her, and they get married. And she comes with a large dowry of cattle, but they all come from inside of the lake. So she marries the man, and they have three sons, and one day, they're getting ready to go to a wedding, and she forgets her gloves, and she asks if he can run back and get her gloves, and there's a miscommunication, and she's just kind of twirling around, dilly-dallying, and he comes back with the gloves, and he's frustrated because she hasn't done, like, I think she was supposed to hitch the horses. And so he kind of just takes the gloves and kind of just whacks her, and she's like, now I told you not to hit me. You can't hit me two more times. And he was, like, really remorseful and was just like, oh, man, I didn't really mean to hurt you. I'm so sorry. And she's like, yeah, it's fine. Just don't do it twice more. So they go to the wedding, and halfway through the wedding, she bursts out into tears. And kind of an embarrassment, he tries to hush her, and he taps her very aggressively on the shoulder. And she's like, well, now you've hit me twice, and you may not do it one more time. And by the way, I'm only crying because this marriage is going to end in complete ruin, and I can see all of the pain that's about to happen. And so he was, like, very careful not to strike her again. Time goes on, and they end up going to a funeral, and it's at the funeral that she starts laughing, and he does the same thing. He taps her, and he's like, you know, you're supposed to be solemn and respectful. Stop, you know, stop laughing. And she's like, well, I'm only laughing because I can see that his spirit has been freed from his body in this awful life, and I can see him happy and dancing and playing in the other life, and I'm very joyful. And now you've struck me three times. And so she goes back to the lake, and she descends into the lake, and all of her cattle comes with her. And she does come back and visits her sons multiple times, and she teaches them the magic of herbal healing. And her sons become the Physician of Matavai, which are a very famous lineage of Welsh physicians that were... you can trace their line up until about the mid-1800s when they died out. But that's not the only lake lady story there is that's not to do with the Arthurian tales. There's a couple more, and they have to do with cattle. And so there's a connection between these Welsh lake fairy and sacred cattle. And in this other story, it's another lake lady, and she gifts a white cow to a farmer. And for many, many years and generations, he milks the cow, and this cow is, like, feeding the village with, like, tons of milk and creating babies, and just this whole village is now, like, booming with prosperous cattle and food, and the cow's getting kind of old. And so he takes it to slaughter one day and takes it to the market, and the butcher's getting ready to slaughter him. And he brings the axe down and kind of hits him right in the forehead between the two eyes. And at that point, the lady at the lake fairy rises and calls the cattle home, or this particular white cow home. And he doesn't die. He still has this big slit in his head, and he destroys the butcher shop and destroys the town on his way out and heads back down into the lake. But the lake lady is so angry that she calls home the original cow, the first generation, second generation, third, all the way up to the fourth generation of offspring, which basically ends up leaving the entire village without any cattle. And so the village falls to ruin, and the farmer kills himself. But moral of the story is, don't mess with the sacred cows from the lake. So a lot different than your typical Arthurian stories where it's about the sword. And though I do believe that those are later stories of the same grouping, if that makes sense.
Yes. Well, and the other thing that's really interesting too is there's what are called Selkies.
Yes.
And do you want to describe those?
Yeah. So Selkies are, they're usually... associated with the northern part of the UK, so Scotland, and the Orkneys. And they are basically seals. And the seals have the ability to shapeshift. And the way that they do this is by removing their pelt, and then they turn into a woman. Though there are stories of male Selkies too. And then what happens is they... hide their pelt. And if someone has defined it, then they have control over them. So it's basically a very, very powerful tag lock for the Selkie. And there's a couple different stories, but one of the most common ones is the Selkie comes to shore, falls in love with the young man, she hides her pelt. He ends up finding it and takes it and hides it from her so she can't return to the sea. So once the Selkie's pelt has been taken or hidden, it basically prohibits them from going back to their home and their family. And so she ends up having a couple children with him. And one day, depending on the story and the version of the story, there's one version where one of her children finds the pelt and brings it to her and is like, hey, what's this? There's another where she finds it. There's another, I believe, where he returns it to her, kind of feeling bad. And then immediately she takes the pelt and heads back out to sea. And there's a lot of stories of her leaving her children behind, but then also coming back for them, because there are stories and beliefs that the Selkies, like in the stories, bred with humans. And so there is this Selkie, I guess, ancestral connection. There's a couple movies about this. One of my favorites is The Secret of Roan Inish. If you haven't seen it, it's great.
It's really good. It's
yes, good. You can actually see it, I think, in like four pieces on YouTube for free. A couple years ago, I think they had, like, someone had put the whole movie on in like four different chunks, and I watched it that way. But then there's also the animated short. It's not a short, it's a full-length movie, but it's animated, and it's called Song of the Sea. Have you seen that one?
No, I've not seen that.
Have you seen The Book of Kells?
I have seen pieces of it, but I kept falling asleep because I just am a really bad movie watcher.
I'm really bad at movie
watching,
too.
I'm terrible at it. I fall asleep.
I, like, cannot, even in theaters sometimes. It has to be, like, really suspenseful, like, but nail-biting, like, oh, my God, what's going to happen for me to not just be, like, why I almost never go to the theater.
There's
actually
a really great documentary, and the only place that I've found that you can watch it is you can watch the whole thing on YouTube, the whole documentary, and it's called The Fairy Faith. And and the guy who did the documentary is going around, and he was talking to a family in Scotland, and they were talking about how the little girl was saying it was like her great-great-grandmother was a Selkie. So there's entire generations of people who believe that they are the ancestors of Selkies. So it's like that is cool. Very much a link that a lot of people have. Like, it's not a joke to them. They're like, no, my great-great-great-grandmother was a Selkie, and they have their own family lore of what happened. Like, yeah. And it's fascinating. Well, and one of the things that when we had talked to you prior that I absolutely loved and have ordered is we talked about how one of the things we would do at the end of a podcast is we would write down, we would do as below, so above, and we would write down on a piece of paper and then burn in a cauldron what we wanted to bring in and what we wanted to let go of. And you had brought up the concept of dissolvable paper.
Yeah, drowning.
Oh, that's a great idea.
And there are a lot of places, as Courtney pointed out, where you can't use fire.
Burn,
like
yeah.
Even in here, like we don't burn it in here.
Yeah,
we burn it outside.
Yeah, right.
But we could do dissolvable paper, and then we would just have to get a glass bowl instead of a cast iron cauldron because we wouldn't want to do it in cast iron.
Right, but then you can.
Why not using cast iron?
Because it'll rust.
Oh, it'll rust. That's true.
Yeah. So I thought that would be fun if we start kind of intermixing it where we write it on dissolvable paper.
The drowning spell.
And do the drowning
spell.
They
also mentioned Kanani. You cannot actually use actual people in your drowning spells.
That's what you say.
Because Kanani thinks that she is actually a mermaid and not like in the, I'm a pretty mermaid. Like, no, I will drag you to your death just for fun.
Just for funsies.
I mean, mermaids do have a reputation for that. You know, I think we forget that in our modern day practice.
Mine's not as beautiful because I can't sing, so I just have to literally grab you and drag you. I can't, like, get you to jump in the water with my beautiful song. I literally have to chase you on the beach, drag you all the way.
Hillary could sing.
We could be a team.
Hillary could sing, and everyone's, like, attracted to Hillary's
voice.
Yes.
What is that?
And then Kanani sneaks up behind you and drags you down.
This is a beautiful marriage. This is a great idea.
Lesbian mermaids forever!
Yay!
I did want to mention, though, with the drowning ceremonies, if you don't have access to the dissolvable paper, you can just use any paper. It takes a little bit longer to kind of mush. You kind of have to leave it for a couple of hours. And I found that it's quite therapeutic to kind of like put your hands in the water and kind of it. Like once the paper's
smush,
gotten
smush, smush,
I'm into
smush.
That.
I like that.
Smushing rituals.
I'm into that.
Yeah, smushing and tearing until it's like really just like paper soup.
Yeah.
And then I take that outside and put that water into the earth and kind of let that recycle. So you can do
that.
Paper as well. Just kind of
takes a little longer. Yeah.
Paper. I bought a notepad once for like I thought, oh, this would be perfect, and it was like a square notepad, you know, just your typical like index card size. And I thought, oh, this will be perfect because we can use it for ritual. We can just tear and give each person a piece of paper and they can do their thing and go that way. Well, we tried to light it for that ritual and I found out that you can make paper things out of plastic. And so it was like plastic paper and it didn't burn. It was that talk about ritual not going well.
That's funny.
Well, like it turned into these crispy, like, weird things. It was so strange.
You're like, everyone's getting poisoned.
I can't thank you enough for coming on with us
again.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
The book is absolutely phenomenal. I would recommend everyone read it. Like I said, even if you are, particularly if you're not near water. Because I feel like if you're near water, we kind of get used to it. We have our own ideas. There's just so much in there and it opens your mind to all kinds of different ideas. It's involved new things in my practice. Like I said, we're going to start, you know, doing some kind of dissolvable paper, water kind of stuff, and not just always cauldron, because I think it's cool to have those different, different aspects and stuff. So I can't thank you enough for being on again.
Yeah, thank you.
She also agreed to be our ritualist for Columbia Willamette Pagan Pride Day.
Amazing.
Yes,
I know.
That's so exciting.
I'm super excited. So we're going to get to see her in
person.
What
day is that again?
That is going to be on September 15th at Oaks Park. See if I got that right. Yep, September 15th at Oaks Park in Portland.
Fantastic.
And we're hoping to even be able to do the ritual down by the water because
be
it's
so
right
cool.
off
it's
the
right
Willamette
there,
River.
Yeah.
Yep. So thank you so much for being here. And we're going to make sure that your book and all the different fabulous little things are on the resources page of our website for people to check out. But thank you. I'm a huge fan.
Oh, thank you so much for having me again. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
Yeah, you too. I'll talk to you guys later.
Thanks.
Bye.
Join us on the first and third Mondays of the month for magical tools, tips, and stories about living as a witch in today's world.
Find us at thatwitchlife.com for archived episodes or to ask your burning questions for us to answer.